alone. Step by step, step by step, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Zach. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute silent meditation. Please take a moment to get situated and get comfortable in your seat, and we're going to take this time to connect with God, help you focus. So. We can turn the lights down. If you want to join me in the fog light prayer, it's in the cards in the seat in front of you, or if you don't know it, repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light for those who are lost, sick, and dying. You can find your love through me. Amen. From There Is a Solution, from the Big Book. The tremendous fact for every one of us is we've discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I have asked to read Spiritual Experience for me.
Itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes has described though it was not our intention to create such impressions, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by vast changes in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly grown membership of thousands of alcoholics and transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety. Because of these develop slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. Yeah. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few expectations, our members find that they have been taped on unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experiences, or more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathy, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honesty facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, excuse me, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need to have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against an argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. The principle is content prior to the investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, TJ. Please also refrain from disturbing others by constantly getting up or down during the meeting. And again, this is also a tech-free meeting, so we ask that you please don't be texting during the meeting. It's disrespectful, and thank you to those of you who don't. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our speaker tonight, Russell. He's on step 11 tonight. He'll be speaking until 9:15, and wow, I mean, I can't believe our journey's almost to an end. It's just been spectacular so far, so please help me welcome Russell.
Evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic, and it's good to be back here. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had one since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God and a lot of really super people that helped me out along the way, and I want to sort of share with you a little bit about my experience with this deal, as we have been doing, or I've tried to do for the last few weeks now. This is just my experience. It may not match your experience. You don't have to do what I did. This is not me saying that my way is the only way, or just do it this way, or, you know, you'll have to get out of this whatever you get out of this. But, you know, before every meeting, and I think I might have spoken about this last week, one of the things I want to do, at least the way I think today, which is different than the way I thought when I first came in here. You know, when I first came in here, I thought, like, this is the way I thought. I said, I need a meeting. I remember many, many times saying, I need a meeting. I needed that meeting. I needed to get to a meeting. And that is not to say that I don't need meetings these days as well as many other things. But in coming to meetings, I don't find myself thinking, at least I haven't in a long time, find myself thinking, gee, I need a meeting, or I'm desperately seeking a meeting. What I find myself thinking about is, you know, what can I do or say to help somebody who's having a problem? And I want to sort of try to, how can I carry whatever message I can carry to assist somebody who's going through a rough spot? And in order to sort of do that, what I think, because the way I want to do it is I want to share my experience. You know, I've obviously over the last 34 years, I'm very familiar with material. Read the big book, The 12 and 12, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Read a lot of other books. Certainly quote them. I can read them. And I think it's important to be involved and deep into the material, into the big book. But I don't want to, you know, come off like I'm preaching or I'm giving a sermon or I'm giving a lecture. And I feel like they say in the big book, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened and what we're like now. So I'm always constantly thinking, what is it about my story? What is it about what happened to me that I can talk about that might be helpful to other people? Now, when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the only story I had was the drinking deal. And so that's what I spoke about most of the time. You know, you don't try not to talk outside your experience. And so I was fairly good at explaining what it was like, what happened, you know, why I drank and how I drank and when I drank, and then what happened to me as far as the drinking is concerned. But I came into AA when I was 31 years old. And I had started drinking when I was around 15 or so. So I had drank for about 15, 16 years. So I had 31 years of experience in the world, dealing with the world, without AA, without any type of spiritual real guidance, and with using alcohol, the drug alcohol, as well as other drugs like women, cars, money, all the other things that I found that I was addicted to. They don't arrest you for that stuff, though. They don't arrest you for driving while being constantly obsessed about women. They don't arrest you for driving while, you know, feeling despondent or depressed because you don't have money. They don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. They don't arrest you for stuff. They don't arrest you for spending money you don't have, buying things you don't need to impress people you don't like because you feel worthless. They don't arrest you for things like that. So seemingly your life doesn't become unmanageable like it does with the booze. And the truth of the matter is, no woman, no car, no amount of money worked for me just as well as just a few drinks. So that's why I drank it. And, of course, what happened to me is alcohol stopped working for me. And the real sad part about my life is alcohol stopped working for me about 5 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and so I hurt a lot of people. But what happens is I come in here, and all I know about is the drinking, and now I'm not drinking, and that's the miracle for me. But as I said, I came in when I was 31, and now I've had 34 years of road testing this deal that we're doing right now, this book, this program of recovery, with my higher power, which has become over a period of years, and you would imagine if you're working the steps, even if you're working them the way most of us work them, crummy. I don't mean crummy. What I mean is nobody does these things perfectly. I didn't do them perfectly. I still don't do them perfectly. You know, there's like false starts and, you know, but if you do these steps over a period of time and you keep on trying repeatedly these things on all your problems, one would expect, like in the 11th step, if you're doing these steps, that somehow, some way, the law of averages says if you keep on trying, eventually you're going to, as they say, somehow improve your conscious contact with God. You're going to sort of improve, and to improve your conscious contact with God, it means you're going to sort of like get a more well-defined, stronger faith. You know, it says in the big book, it says when it talks about what happens to us when we make that decision, sincerely make that decision. When we sincerely make that decision, all sorts of the decision to stop playing God. You know, I don't even know how you play God. You know, it took me years to even figure out. Half these things I mouth and I talk about, like I think I know what I'm talking about, I don't even understand what they're talking about. If I pin somebody down and I said, okay, how do you play God? They would say, I don't know. You know, how do you play God? See, I have a lot of these old ideas that apparently, I mean, I'm not just talking about, I'm not talking about the alcohol. I'm going to talk to you tonight about 34 years of working this program and going through all the vagaries of life, you know. I mean, you know, when you've been around for 34 years and you've raised four children, you have six grandchildren, you're self-supporting through your own contributions, you know, you're alive on the planet, you basically go through just about whatever you have to go over 34 years, what you would expect to go through. You go through the traffic jams, you go through the unfair treatment, you go through the car accidents, you go through the bounce checks, you go through the financial debacles, you go through the bad relationships, you go through the unfair treatment, you go through the disappointments, you know, you go through all the financial stuff, you go through everything, you go through the whole deal, you go through the cancer, been there, done that several times, you go through the health problems, you go through people you love dying, you go through people you sponsor and that you love slipping and leaving, you go through, I'll tell you, if you've got a year and you've been through a lot in a year, just multiply whatever you've been through times 34. And that's what the deal. You go through that. You understand? And you, while you're going through that, you try to make sure you're not going to drink. And you try to make sure you're not going to screw up some other way. And you try to keep on. So you get to work this thing, you know, in the laboratory of life. Because the truth of the matter is where this thing really comes out, where you really start. It's... For me, it's I can't learn the lessons I need to learn sufficiently locked up in my bedroom with a big book or even a Bible. Or I need to learn the lessons out on the street in the traffic jams. I need to learn the lessons. I need to learn the lessons. I need to meet God. It seems to me I've noticed a pattern over 34 years, and the pattern is I more clearly get involved with the God of my understanding in the valleys. And I came in here in the valley. I didn't come up here in here riding the crest, you know, with $1 million in the bank and a good-looking blonde by my side and a fast car, saying, "Gee, this would be a good time to check out Alcoholics Anonymous." I came in here morally and physically bankrupt. I gave alcohol. I paid it every single thing I had. I gave it my wife, my child, all the money I had in the bank. I gave it my self-esteem, my self-respect. And when I was done giving it everything, paying it everything I had, it wanted more, and I was unable to give it. I had nothing more to give alcohol. And December 25th, 1980, I got down on my knees and prayed to a God I didn't even understand and I didn't even get. And I said, "God, please help me." And I turned my life over to that God. And I didn't even know what I was doing, but I can tell you one thing, I did it sincerely. I did it sincerely because I was hopeless and I was helpless. And 25 days, 30 days later, I looked up from a hospital gurney after being involved in an accident where I was drunk and almost killed myself, and I said, "God, help me again." Looked the man in the eye, said, "I need help. I can't stop drinking." And that's the last drink I ever had, you know, on January 25th, 1981. And that was a miracle. That and the lifting of the obsession was a miracle. But over the last 34 years, I've been going through that similar experience in the valleys and going through this stuff and road testing this thing, experiencing life using this stuff, having nothing to do with the drinking. There ain't no drinking involved. There's just living. There's just breathing. There's just getting through life from 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, you know, just trying to make it without drinking, blowing my brains out, and acting good purpose no matter what happens. Using every tool in the book, and most of the time not having any idea what I'm doing. And over a period, and so what you see here before you, what I am, is I'm a 66-year-old man, at least I will be on March 16th, 66-year-old man who has, for the last 34 years, been working this deal to the best of my ability. So anything I say, if it doesn't make any sense or you don't like it, don't blame me. Blame Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm a product. I'm a product. What I am, believe me, I didn't intend to be this way. You know, I had plans. I was going to be the Hugh Hefner of Miami. Because of a few bad breaks and misunderstandings, it didn't work out that way. So what you got here is I am a product of this deal, working on my life, my working it to the best of my ability. So the only thing I want to try to share with you as best as I can is my personal experience. Because you can argue, we can argue opinions and facts, but you can't argue with experience. And so that's what I want to be. So when I come in here and I say, how can I help people, what I'm thinking of is like this. What was it like for me? What happened and what it's like now? I mean, how have things changed? Because I am different at 34 years, the way I am right now, than I was at 2 months. Now, you have people in here that have 2 months, 2 days, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and you know if you have some time in here, even if it's 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, you know that where you are right now is completely different. You've changed in many ways, amazingly, since when you first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you have 5 years, let's say, and you can look back, you can look at yourself now at 5 years, no matter what's going on, and then try to remember where you were, if you can, when you had 5 days. If you can see an incredible change in your life, in the way you think about yourself, and the way you think about other people, and the way you think at all, the way you think, in the 5 years you've been in, imagine if that happened in 5 years, what would happen if you worked this thing after 10 years? And if you've got 10 years and you can see an unbelievable change, like night and day, and I'm not even talking about the drinking. Bill Wilson said the next frontier is emotional sobriety. It says the real problem with the alcoholic is unhealthy dependencies. Whatever that means, that's another. What does that mean? What are we dependent on? I thought it was just an alcohol problem. If at 10 years you can see unbelievable, incredible changes in your life, remarkable changes, between 1 day and 10 years, then imagine what it would be like in 20 years. And if you got 20 years and you see you're like a completely different person, you could see unbelievable changes in the way you react to life, react to people, and react to things in your life when you had like 1 day or 2 days or even 5 years. Imagine what it would be like when you have 30 years. And so this thing keeps on growing and getting better and better and better. And so my deal is, how do I sort of explain this deal, what's going on, what it was like for me, what happened, and what it's like now with all the other stuff. It says in the book, it says, and sort of try to explain to you the truth. And the one thing I want to get across to you is the truth. So I'm going to just tell you the absolute God's honest truth right now. You don't have to buy into it. Some of you will. Some of you won't. Some of you will, maybe somewhere down the road. It all has to do with your relationship with God. Period. And it has nothing to do with your brains. The smartest people in the world figure out a way to screw up their life royally. You know, Dr. Carl Menninger said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. Out to absolutely, the most brilliant, talented people in the world have figured out how to commit suicide and completely decimate their lives and do stupid things. It has nothing to do with brains. Brains will many times somehow point you in the wrong direction. My best thinking on my best days got me, you know, into most of the trouble I was in. It says, first of all, we talk about old ideas. I don't see anything wrong. I don't want to rewrite the book. I don't see anything wrong with the idea of old ideas. But I prefer to think of it in terms of old programs. You know, most of us have computers. Most of us have cell phones. Most of us are familiar with operating systems and programs. We may not be IT specialists, but we understand what Word is, what Office is, what Windows is. We all have computers where, you know, you ever have a computer where you call up somebody and it's all screwed up, and I called my IT guy and I said, what to do? He says, turn it off and turn it back, reboot it. In other words, kill it. Take away the power and kill the damn machine and reboot it. We're not talking about old ideas. We're talking about the brain ain't working properly. You hit the letter L and it comes out P, but it thinks it's L. You see, it says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our trouble, right? A 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others and they retaliate. That's the real problem. We've made decisions based upon self. Decisions based upon self where we think, I don't know, you ask any alcoholic in the world, you know, they'll tell you, I'm a good person. I'm not a serial killer. I'm a good person. I mean, that's my opinion, because somehow, some way, I can see the evil crap in everything around me, but I can't see the evil in me. And if I spot it for a nanosecond, somehow, some way, I can forgive myself because it's not my fault, because I wouldn't have done it if you didn't do this. You know, I was talking yesterday at a meeting about something, maybe I might even share it, about something to do with, you know, what happened with me and my former wife and some of the ways I operated, you know, which were just plain evil, bad stuff, you know. But I somehow excused myself. I hurt a lot of people, a lot of ways, and I got to tell you something. Every once in a while, I would feel a tinge of guilt, just like a little tinge of guilt, you know what I mean? But somehow, some way, I was able to sort of get through it and not, because the way my mind works, the way I'm programmed, is I think about, what is it? It says we're selfish, we're self-centered. Above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. We must or it kills us. And my selfishness apparently manifests itself in the idea that I'm constantly thinking about me. I am very concerned about me. I would like to go to a meeting. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to go to a meeting and talk a little bit about me. I'd like to tell you about me. I really need a meeting. I need to tell you about my problems. I mean, you're going to try to talk to me and say, no, I'm not done. You got to listen. I used to do relay on the phones. You know, I get on the relay and I try to get a word in edgeways with some guy who was, you know, an alcoholic calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning. He says, and you couldn't get a word. He says, no, you got to listen. This is what alcoholics say. They say, you got to listen to me. Like it's in the Talmud or something. Like it's in the Torah. Like it's in the New Testament. You got to listen to me. I'm important. My story's important. You got to listen to me. Listen to what I'm saying. You don't understand. This is what happened to me. I'm a me, in touch with my feelings, I was never out of touch with my feelings. My whole life is thinking about my feelings. All I think about is, how do I feel? Why do I feel this way? What's wrong with me? And I always come up with the answer. It's you. You're the one who's wrong with me. You're wrong with me. This group is wrong with me. This state is wrong with me. The world, some people need an excuse to drink. Awake was good enough for me. That's all I needed. Just being in this crummy world, the way it is, and somehow things, you know, and somehow these expectations, and it says, first of all, we have to quit playing God. I am programmed to not only think about me all the time, but thinking I'm the center of the universe, that I am God. How do I play God? Well, you know what it says in the book? It says we can't manage our own lives, and all I do is I walk out of an A room and think about what I'm going to do and what my life's going to be like and what's going to be like a year from now, and what am I going to... All I do is make up all these little scenarios as to what I'm going to do and where I'm going to be and what's going to happen, as if I have any control over any of this stuff. I just make decisions as to how things should be for me, how much money I should have, what should happen to the job, how people should act. And start thinking, why aren't they acting this way? And when is it going to happen this way? And all I do is sort of prophesize my own life with this little fantasy thing instead of taking it one day at a time. And if it doesn't go my way, I get upset, like, because it's supposed to go the way I thought it was supposed to go. And all I do is think about the way it's supposed to go and the way it's supposed to be and the way people are supposed to act and why they're supposed to act this way. And all I do is play God with people, like your little chess pieces, you know, moving along a board. And, you know, why didn't he act this way? And why didn't he say that way? And why doesn't he do it my way? And nobody's ever doing it my way. It says if you stop doing that, how do you stop doing that? It's like being right-handed. How do you stop being right-handed? When your whole life you think about yourself and you can't help but think about yourself, you just naturally think about yourself. You know, it's like to ask me not to think about myself is to ask me because I'm thinking about myself even when I think I'm not thinking about myself. So how do you stop thinking about yourself and doing this sort of program you got running when it's like being right? How do you stop being right-handed? When this is the way I just think the way I think. My sponsor said, why do you do the things you do? I say, that's just my personality. He says, your personality's killing you. How do you change your personality? When we take this decision, the decision for God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. That's what's happened to me over a period of 34 years. Remarkable stuff. Not just the drinking. The drinking was the first remarkable thing. There's been many other remarkable things that have happened to me. Hundreds of other remarkable things that have happened to me. There's been remarkable things happening to you. You know, when we take this position, this sincere position of trusting and relying upon God, all sorts of remarkable things happening. Being all powerful, he gives you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. If you stay close to him and perform his work well. Now, this is in my opinion. This is what's called the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This isn't my program. This isn't your program. This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says he'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well, which means, you know, I'm just going to tell you what I think it means. I'm going to keep it simple, that you have to keep close to him and you have to perform his work well. Does that make any sense? Which means you want to try to find out as best you can over a period of time. The most important thing in your mind is this: who is he? Who is God? And what does he want me to do? You get it? I can't make it any simpler than that. Who is God, and what does he want me to do? Thy will be done, not mine. What is his will for me? It has something to do, there's a connection between that and turning your will and your life over to his care so you can do his will. This is not a complicated deal unless you're an alcoholic and you're programmed the wrong way. Then you can turn that into something like good orderly direction and just go on with your life and try to manage it and do it your way, but just make sure you don't get arrested. And that's good enough. You can just sort of settle for not changing at all. Instead of getting into the more weightier subjects of really going all out for him and jumping in that pool and getting wet, turning your life over to him, turning your will over to him, focusing on him and trying to figure out what he would have you do. It says when we do this, all sorts of remarkable things happen. We lose all concerns about our little plans and designs. That's what it says. It says we lose all concerns. Let me see what it says right here. Right here. I've got it right here. This is what's going to happen to you. It says in... when we took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. It says, established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. What would your life be like if you didn't think about you? No, what would your life be like if you didn't think about you? You know what would happen? There'd be a whole lot less talking about you. You wouldn't talk much about you unless you were trying to talk about you and your experience to help other people. There'd be a whole lot less thinking about you, which, by the way, would mean there'd be a whole lot less thinking. You wouldn't have to worry about the committee. The committee is out to lunch. No committee. When you're not thinking about yourself, the committee is gone. There's no chatter. You know, when there's no chatter, you can hear that still small voice. You can have a better sense of him and his presence. It's very hard to think about him and to have him operate in your life when all you're thinking about every 5 seconds is, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Over and over and over. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to me? Over and over and over again. Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? Over and over and over. Why can't I have this? What's going to happen if this happens? What's going to happen if that happens? Why are they treating me like this? Why look at me? Why? What's going to happen if this happens? What's going to happen if that happens? You know, what are they thinking about me? What am I going to do if this happens? It's very hard to think about him or focus on him or have any type of serene life when all you're doing is, when all you have is 1,000 different voices in your head all telling you bad crap about yourself and other people. And that's what happens to alcoholics. That's why we're restless, irritable, and discontented unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. As we felt, it says, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. That's what it says later on in the 8th step. It says, we find our real job is to be of maximum service to God and other people. They asked Mother Teresa after following around for a few days. A guy from the New York Times said, I wouldn't do what you do for $1 million. She said, neither would I. She wasn't thinking about herself. She was thinking about other people. Came less and less. And it says, in seeing what we can contribute to life. What happens is one day, 1 year, 1 decade, you're going to meetings because you have to go to meetings. You're going to meetings because you need a meeting. You know, you're trying to get to a meeting because you need a meeting. And all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're going to a meeting to see whether you can help somebody. And not only are you going to a meeting to see whether you can help somebody because you desire to help somebody. You want to help somebody. You know, I lived a life, you know, and I see there's a lot of guys. And I lived a life where I was a hunter. I didn't hunt big game. I hunted females. I'd go out nights with guys looking, prowling around the neighborhood. I'm not talking about it in the weird way like stalking, but, you know, going to the bars, going to the lounges. No, but listen, I'm talking about what's happening in real life. I'm talking about ladies' night. I'm talking about going out on a Saturday night and having your entire existence focused on getting her. I wanted what she had. I was willing to go to any length to get it. You know, I was willing to do anything, anywhere, because she was going to be the answer to my solution. And that's the way of this world. That's the way of this world. And it's one of the things that helped get me to where I am right now, one of these unhealthy dependencies. That's an unhealthy dependency. Needing to buy and get stuff because I brought a guy in one day to speak for AA. I did the intergroup banquet in Dade County. I was the chairman there for 2 years when I was 3 or 4 years sober. And I brought a gentleman in to speak at the meeting, circuit speaker, wonderful circuit speaker. And I stole a line from him. You'll hear what the line is. I'll admit it. I steal a lot from people that I hear that I respect. And this is a man. Now, this is an interesting deal. I was I graduated with departmental honors in mathematics. I was a National Science Foundation fellow. I then went to law school, graduated law school, became a division chief in the state's attorney's office, trying murder cases and things like that. You know, I got my law degree and all that sort of stuff. I bring a guy in who spent 20 years in prison. You know, had basically no education, spent 20 years in prison, and found Alcoholics Anonymous and God in prison. And when I brought him in, he had like, you know, 30 years sobriety or something like that. And he tells his story. His story, I mean, who he was and where he came from, couldn't have been more different. He couldn't have come from more different circumstances than my story. You understand what I'm saying? He was an ex-con, did 20 years in prison, found God in prison, found AA in prison, stopped drinking. He's 30 years sober, okay? My story is I came from an upper-class, middle-class family from Great Neck, New York. I went to school. I excelled in school, you know, did well. National Science Foundation Fellowship, Departmental Honors Mathematics, law school, state attorney's office, division chief. That's my story. You know, wrecked my marriage, wrecked my life, and I drank. That's my story. We couldn't come from more different areas. I'm sitting there in the audience like you're sitting there with me right now. Completely different stories, completely different people. He says this line. This is the line he says. I don't know if it was original or he got it. He said, let me tell you what my real problem was. I was a nothing. I was a nothing. I used to put something in my body, it turned me into an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. And I'm in the back room and I'm saying, that's me. That's me. I'm in a three-piece suit. I'm a division chief in the state's attorney's office. By the world standard, I'm successful. And he said that. He said, that's exactly the way I felt. That's me. I didn't know that was me until he put it into words. I said, that's exactly the way I was. I never felt good enough. I never felt worthy. No matter where I was, I needed a better car, a nicer gal, a different house. I was always comparing my insides with somebody else's outsides, how they looked, how they were. I was always feeling less than, not good enough. That's me. And that's just one basis of the disease of alcohol. How do you get rid of that? It says, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoy peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence, the presence of the Spirit. Some people, the more religious types like me, say the Holy Spirit. Conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. How would that be? What would that be? If that happened, I mean, maybe this whole program is based upon lies. I mean, I think what they put in was what actually happened to them. Let's say that happened. What would that kind of person look like? They talk about in the 12 and 12 and the 6 step we went over, it says the difference between the men and the boys is the men are those individuals who are trying to grow consistently in the image and likeness of their own creator. It says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly. I like that. I like these words that they use, utterly to him. Thoroughly followed our path. Utterly abandoned to him. Doesn't sound like a half measure type of thing. Sounds like the real deal. Sounds like really taking this thing seriously. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. Nothing less than this, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, this isn't even me. This is me because this is my experience over a period of 30. I'm telling you my experience over 34 years. This wasn't my experience at 3 months. This wasn't my experience at 6 months. This wasn't my experience at 6 years. This wasn't my experience at 10 years. At 10 years sober, I'm going to meetings. I'm saying the Lord's Prayer. I'm praying. I'm saying the Serenity Prayer, I'm reading the big book, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm still thinking about all my troubles with money. I'm still doing hand-to-hand combat with the world. I'm trying to help people, I'm doing the service, I'm doing what we do, but I'm still, when is this going to end? When am I going to know the new freedom and the new happiness? When am I going to get to that point, like I said to Ray O'Keefe, when am I going to lose financial insecurity? When am I going to stop worrying about money? When am I going to stop worrying about myself? I'm 10 years sober. It's driving me crazy. I'm looking at my bank account. It's driving me. I got 4 kids. You know, how do you stop worrying about money when you got 4 kids? You don't have enough money for the mortgage. When am I going to stop dealing with this stuff? When is it always going to be with the ups and the downs? You know I got 10 years. I know I'm doing these steps here. I know I'm helping people. I know I look sober. I mean, I am sober. I know I can see a difference, but it's not. I still got problems. When am I going to be financially secure? And he looks at me. He says, never. And I say, what do you mean never? When do I make the $1 million? When do I stop? He says, never. He says, it doesn't say that. He says, you're going to lose the fear. He says, you'll always be broke, but it won't bother you. How can it not bother you? Everything bothers me. Everything bothers me. What you just said to me bothers me. My sponsor says, he says, the reason you're upset is because you're upsettable. What does that mean? I knew the reason I was upset was because of my wife. Because how can you not be upset when people are acting the way they act and being the way they are? You know, I'll be okay as long as the world shapes up. When is that going to happen? Like never. What happens when, how do you get to the point where things don't bother you when everything is everything bothered me before I came to AA? And you wanted something? Just about everything bothered me after I came to AA. If you don't think things bother people and alcoholics are botherable, you're not going to some of the discussion meetings I'm going to. You know, and all of a sudden, one day, I look around and things haven't bothered me for a long time. I'm not saying it's perfect, that you never have a bad moment or anything, but all of a sudden you sort of look around and you're fairly good shape and things aren't bothering you, and it has nothing to do with circumstances because you're how you feel about yourself and how you feel about people and how you feel about how you deal with people and what your motivations are have very little to do with how much money you have in the bank. That your fear level or your serenity level or your peace of mind or how you treat people or how you care about people or how you want to deal with your life and what you want to do doesn't rise and fall like this, depending upon whether you have a job, whether you don't have a job, whether the boss likes you or doesn't like you, whether you have money or you don't have money, whether your wife or husband is upset or not upset, whether you have a partner or don't have a partner, whatever. It just doesn't depend. All of a sudden, who you are inside is divorced from the things on the outside. All of a sudden, it doesn't really matter that much what kind of car you have. All of a sudden, it doesn't matter very much, you know, how much money you have in your pocket. All of a sudden, it doesn't matter very much, you know, a lot of stuff that used to matter, whether you have a new dress or a new suit or new clothes. All of a sudden, the thing, whether or not you can take a vacation or not take a vacation, whether other people are doing better than you or worse, all of a sudden, all the things that used to be so important to you in your life, you wake up one day and you don't even realize, and here's the key, you don't know when they stop being important. One day, everything that was happening outside of you was the most important thing in the world, and everything you took personally and everything you just internalized, and it caused all sorts of conversations going on in your mind. And one day, you sort of wake up and you say, boy, this is pretty good. I don't know. And you don't even know why you feel good. Maybe 6 years after you started feeling good, most of the time, and having a good time, it all of a sudden comes to you and say, you know, all this stuff, I mean, all of a sudden you hear people talking at meetings. And they're talking about the cars and the girls and the romance and the mother and the father and the sisters and the brother and the this and the that and whatever it is. And all of a sudden it occurs to you, man, it's not that you're putting them down or you're looking down on them. You say things like this, say, wow, I remember when I used to think like that. And then you realize, you say, man, I haven't thought like that in a long time. And you're baffled because here's the problem. You can't even remember when you stopped thinking like that. You can't. You just, all of a sudden, it just comes. It just comes. And this is what you realize. Then you read this part in the book where it says, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And then you recall that not only is this said in the first part where they talk about the great fact, but after all those promises things that we all like to meet at meetings, you know, we're going to know a new freedom and we're going to know a new happiness. No matter how far down we go, we see where we can help others. Fear of people, economic insecurity is going to leave us. We remember, hey, they said the exact same thing after those promises. We see that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves, basically saying the same things. And all of a sudden it comes to us, we sort of realize, wait a second, I've been thinking about God a lot. I'm 15 years sober. I've been going to Bible study. How did that happen? A Jewish kid from New York going to Bible study. Every Thursday morning at 7:30, I bring the bagels to the Bible study. My new sponsor, is a Baptist preacher who's got 58 years sobriety. I met at Bible study. How did that happen? Then all of a sudden you read in the book about these guys that started the thing, and they were all belonging to church, and they encouraged church membership. Now, that is not me. We're not alive with any child. I'm not saying you got... All of a sudden, I'm talking about this is my story. You understand? You do whatever story you want to do. My story is a story that I started significantly changing. There was a connection between my reprogramming, my doing away with the old ideas, my getting rid of that, my being transformed, like it says in the big book. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes are set over to one side, and they become dominated by a new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. And he talks about basically how this is a phenomena. It's a miracle. This is what Dr. Jung says, and he says it has to do with God. And all of a sudden, I make a connection, and this is the connection I make. I say, as I've stopped thinking about these things, I happen to be noticed I've been hanging around these people. I've been going to these other, I'm not only going to AA a lot, but I'm reading the Bible. I'm reading spiritual. I'm reading the same books they were reading. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed up. All of a sudden, I find myself reading the same stuff they were reading before they wrote this thing during the first 4 years, which they found absolutely essential. All of a sudden, I find myself that I'm going to church, that I've got not only friends that are in AA, but friends that are in church. They're not necessarily alcoholics. I'm studying by. I'm going more and more. And all I find is that my whole life is now populated, not only in AA, but in church, with spiritual people, with God. And all I'm in the conversation, the lunch, I'm having lunch, the lunches I'm having with people are people that want to talk about God. Sometimes it's AA people. Sometimes it's church people. Sometimes it's a combination of both of them, okay? And I find that I'm always involved somehow. This is Thursday. This morning at 7:30, I was with the bagels. I was with the guys with the bagels, you know, 30 guys, you know. Now I'm here with you guys talking about the bagel thing this morning. And what I find is all I do is I talk about him. All I do is I think about him. If you're talking, listen, if you sit around and talk about guys about cars, then you walk away and you're thinking about cars. You sit around and talk to guys about girls, you walk away, think about girls. You sit around and talk about people about traveling or all the other stuff. How are those Knicks? Hey, how are those Dolphins doing? That's what you think about sports. You sit around, you talk to people about God. That's what you think about. He becomes the central part of your life. And what you realize is that this incredible freedom from fear, this freedom from anxiety, this peace of mind, This ability to love other people, not because they're perfect, but because they're imperfect and they need help, just like I am. This thing that's happened to you where instead of always thinking about yourself, you're thinking about other people or you're thinking about God or how you can help people, and there's some sort of disconnect between the way you always thought about things and stuff and money and everything like that, and there's like it's sort of like not connected to you. Except once in a while, it comes back here and there. You have that, and all of a sudden, you realize that this is somehow connected to your increased connection to God and people that are thinking about God and talking about God. You just notice it. You see that, and then you start reading the book, and all of a sudden, it's starting to make sense. We cannot manage our own lives. No person can help us. God could and would if he was sought. And it makes sense. It makes sense not because you read. And it says, being convinced, we're now at step three. And now all of a sudden, you're really doing step three. You're not just mouthing step three or making believe step three. Your life is step three. You're not turning it over. You've turned it over. You're living a turned over life. And all of a sudden, the whole thing's making sense to you, not because you read it or because you thought it, because you've been living it. Over and over again through the valleys, because that's where you meet him, in the valley. When you have no money and you're 5 years sober and you can't pay the rent and they're going to evict you and you have no money for food, and you don't know where you're going to do and where you're going to go, and the only thing you know is you don't want to drink. And so you don't have any place to turn, nowhere to do. You don't know what's going to happen. So the only thing you do is you pick up the big book and you read some things about God, and then you finally get on your knees and say, God, help me. And somehow, some way, and I don't know how it happens. I really don't know how it happens. You wake up the next day and the money comes in, or this happens, or another place opens up, and you escape that deal, and you say, thank you, God, this thing really works. And then you forget about it the day after that and continue to manage his life. And after the 1,000th time, around 25 years sober, it sticks, and you say, there really is a God. This has always worked. And you start having solid, serious faith, just like they say in the book of James. Rejoice when you have trials of many kinds. And you persevere through those trials because it builds your faith and become mature. And then somehow, some way, you start building your entire life upon this thing, and that's the deal. And all of a sudden, you're reading the book, and the book, you're reading it at a different level. You're reading it at a different level because you're not reading a book, you know, just because you're reading something somebody's saying. You're saying, wouldn't it be nice if this is true, or what does that really mean? You're reading a book, you're saying, this is my life. This isn't their life. This is my life. This is what happened to me. I've been thoroughly doing what they're telling me to do, and guess what? I'm experiencing the exact thing that they're experiencing because I've been doing what they've been telling me to do. And then you go to an AA meeting, and you try to explain it to them, and they look at you like you're crazy. Because we don't talk like that in AA, and we don't talk so much about God. You're preaching and everything like that, and you try to tell them the truth, but they don't want to hear the truth. Because if this is the truth, you're putting me down, you're talking down to me or something, because they don't want to hear the truth. Because the truth can be uncomfortable. It may mean they have to change or maybe do more. And then you read that thing. You read that thing in the and out. Then you read these stories about these people, the first 100 or so people. And then you read this story about the man on the bed, that Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, they have the portrait of him, the picture of him, where they have the Bible open up and they're talking to him, Bill Dodson. And you read his story. And he says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seem to have such a release, such a happiness, something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of my hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have, a release from bondage, not only of the alcohol, but of everything else in the world. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. All I want to do is tell other people what God has done for me. Not about the fourth step, not about the fifth step, not about the 10th step or the 12th step. I just want to tell other people what God has done for me. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the not good or orderly direction, not do the next right thing, not higher power, but the highest power. He had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program into me and for me. And I feel the same way Bill feels. I feel the same way Bill Dodson feels. How couldn't I feel that way? Why wouldn't I feel that way? Should I apologize? I mean, I don't know. Should I apologize? Maybe I should apologize for this. Maybe that's... But here's the problem. I want to sort of apologize to you all for boring you about this God thing. You know what I mean? But somewhere in the big book, I seem to remember them saying something like, perhaps there is a better way. We think so. If we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust the infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role as he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. So I'm called upon to do a seven. He said, well, that guy's not talking about the steps. I didn't hear him talk about the steps. What they want to do, they want to hear the steps. They want to focus on the minors and not focus on the majors. They think this is some sort of mathematical, intellectual thing. You do step one, step two, step three, step four, step five. So you go through all the way through step 12. You help other people. It's like a psychological deal. And if you do it right, you could somehow get through this whole thing and do all the steps and never have to worry about the God thing. And they throw out the baby with the bathwater, and they'll never get sober, and they'll never get what they have because they missed the whole point of the deal. They think it's some sort of college course, like they're taking calculus or analytical geometry. And if they learn these things like you learn isometrics or Pilates or something like that and just do them over and over again, you know what I mean, based upon your own power and your own will and ignoring the God thing and avoiding that, that somehow, some way, you're going to get that supernatural transformation of your personality so that all of a sudden you become a completely different person. And you really think you're going to do it. You really think that's what this book is about. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. How would you like to be outgrowing fear like that? Never have anxiety. Never be anxious. How would you like to outgrow fear? Wouldn't that be okay with you? And you know why people don't talk about this stuff in AA? You know why? You don't know why? You know why. You know why? You just don't know how to say it. Because they're scared. That's the only reason they don't. It's all in the... Listen... You know, by the way, I want you to know, just in case you haven't recognized, I've been reading from the big book, our basic text. This is in my language. You want to report me in New York, say there's some fool with 34 years reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous during a step meeting. And he's destroying newcomers, you know what I mean? Because he's not saying things like do the next right thing, you know, or all the little wisdom of the room things we hear, which sort of divert us from... Because we wouldn't want to tell anybody that this has to do with God. It might hurt them or something when we're actually killing them by lying to them. What are you scared of? That they'll walk out the door? Where are they going to walk to? Where are they going? Out to drink again. They'll come back in with a different attitude. You know? What are you trying to kill them for? Why isn't this talked about a lot in AA? Because people are scared to talk about it. They're scared of everything in the room. They're scared that people will criticize them. They're scared that people will think bad of them. They're scared that people will laugh at them. They're scared of what other people might think or might judge them. You know why? Because they're scared. I can tell you what that means. That means you don't have the new freedom and the new attitude. That means you're still in bondage to self. That means you may think you're sober, but it's not the kind of sobriety I want. I lived 31 years before I came to AA, and probably 10 or 15 or 20 years after I came to AA, worrying about what other people thought about me. No thank you. Been there, done there. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt. I don't want that deal anymore. I don't want to worry about it. I don't want to be sitting around worrying about what other people think about me or what people in AA think about me. You know what I mean? But I'll tell you something. When you believe in God and you have faith, you don't worry about what other people think about you. You only worry about what He thinks about you. And as far as you're cool with Him, because you know, so I'm not sober because of you. I'm not even sober because of my sponsor. I'm not even sober because of AA. I'm not sober because I got a chip in my pocket, you know? I could lose that chip tomorrow. I'm sober because I have a relationship with God. That's what's keeping me sober. Because at 3 o'clock in the morning, when the walls are closing in, and I have terminal cancer, or something's going on, or something's happening in my life, you want to know something? The Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous just ain't going to be there. My sponsor isn't going to be there. It's going to be me, myself, with either me, myself alone, or with the God of my understanding, who is always with me. Is always with me. Somebody asked me tonight, I mean, Cove was kind enough to drive me up, and I appreciate that. And somebody asked me tonight, one of my friends, he said, will you be going up there alone? He said, and I said to him, I looked at him, I said, I'm never alone. I said, I may be driving by myself, but I'm never alone. I used to always be alone. We know, then he will know loneliness as few men do. That's the life of an alcoholic, to be alone. The life of an alcoholic is to be alone with surrounded by 3,000 people. The life of an alcoholic is to be in a stadium with 80,000 people and feel alone. The life of an alcoholic is to be in a bar surrounded by people and feel alone. That's the life of an alcoholic. You know, I don't need that drunk. I don't need that sober, physically sober. I don't want to feel alone. I want to get this deal. And I'm just telling you, if I'm going to tell you the truth, you know, I mean, I'm not just going to read from you. If I'm going to tell you the truth is, after 34 years sobriety, after like 30 years, 25 years, I finally figured this thing out. This thing has something to do with God and a relationship with God. I know it's sort of hidden in the steps. They don't mention it much up there. I know it's hard to see it when you look at it, especially when you got people in AA saying, don't worry about the God thing. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Y'all ever see The Wizard of Oz? Pay no attention to that man. You know, I know 11 steps says improve your relationship with God, you know, but don't worry about that deal. I know it says turn your will and your life over to God, but don't worry about that thing. You know, I know it says entirely ready to have God remove. Yeah, but don't worry about that God thing, you know. Ask him to remove our shirt. Don't worry about him, you know. He seems to be pretty much in the entire deal there. I mean, I'm just saying. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. I mean, are you guys reading this? Sometimes I don't think they're reading the same steps I am. Sometimes I don't know whether I'm in an AA room or like group therapy. I mean, the difference between Alcoholics Anonymous and group therapy is God. That's the only difference. If we took away the God, if we took away this thing, we took away with God, all we'd have is group therapy. Which is maybe one of the problems, and I'm not putting down hospitals and everything, but God, but doctors generally don't really like to talk about God. It's not something they learn in medical school. And you want to know something? With all their training, if they start talking about God, they may not even be at the same level you're at. So you probably don't get a lot of that in 28-day programs, or maybe even long-term treatment. So it's understandable why you walk in here and think this is basically some sort of psychological claptrap. You just sort of go in here and you go through the motions and everything and expect to get out of it what they got out of it. But if you're honest, don't you have to be honest? But if you're honest with yourself and you read the book and see what they're talking about and see exactly what they were reading and what they were doing, I am suggesting you're probably going to come down with the same conclusion that I came to after many years. And I'm just fortunate, and I'll tell you why I'm fortunate. I didn't even come to this conclusion because I'm bright or I know what I'm doing. I was just fortunate to somehow, some way, be attracted. It's a program of attraction, not promotion, attracted to those men and women who are walking down that path. They are here. Some of you guys came back here. Many of you guys came back here. You know what the crap I'm handing out. You know what I'm handing out. I have to assume if you came back here, it's because you're attracted to this stuff. Not attracted to me, attracted to this stuff that I'm handing out because you don't hear it much at other places. You might want to ask yourself, why don't you hear it much at other places? Because you're attracted. Well, you guys are going to be walking. The guys that are attracted to this stuff and want this, the guys that want God enough, you know what Bill Wilson said? He'll come. You guys are going to get this deal. You guys are going to be doing you guys are going to be doing what I'm doing 10 or 15, 20 years from now. And that's not all of AA. You know, I don't have to get mad at it or get worried about it. That's just the way it is. There are two different. Listen, there's a great. I'll send anybody. You send me your email. This essay called "The Strong Cup of Tea." There are really two different. Strong Cup of Tea say there's three ways of doing Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but I'm, you know, whether there's three ways of doing, there's AA light and then there's AA. Don't kid yourself. Most people are doing AA light. And you know what's crazy? You can do AA light and stay sober for a number of years. Do you know that? If the whole thing is put the plug in the jug And don't drink even if your ass falls off. You can do that for 11 to 12, 15 years. I've seen it done 20 years. A light and not drink. And then just go out there and chase the stuff. And go to meetings. If things get bad enough, you suck your thumb, go to a meeting, call your sponsor, and go nuts at 20 years. You can do that. Unfortunately, eventually it falls down, especially as you get older and get into health problems. A light doesn't work real well anymore, especially when you face death. It's a tough deal. You know, when you got cancer and everything, doing AA light, it's very hard to catch up on the third step at that point in time. So in the end, it really doesn't work that well. You know, it really does. It does, what they said in the book is right. All men of faith have courage. It really is the thing that works. You really want to go. If you're going to be here anyway, I drank the hard stuff. I drank straight scotch, neat. You know, if I'm going to be here, I'm drinking this stuff neat. I'm not going to water it down with ice. I'm going to go for the industrial strength stuff, you know? If I'm going to throw my buck in the deal, it's going to be for the real deal. Okay? Thank you very much.
Wow, amazing. Help me thank Russell one more time. And now we have a secretary tonight. It's Taylor doing our secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Taylor. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. Hi. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are going around. I've asked Katie to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify themselves as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Thank you. Here's Katie, everybody.
Katie, I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you, Katie. From the Big Book, the 1940-style Big Book sponsorship, from forward to the second edition of the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen here, felt, and came to believe and experience is that God, as Russell was speaking about, has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% or greater success rate. At this time, can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics in the room? Give these guys a hand. Anybody looking for a sponsor, get with them. And at this time, is there anyone who needs a sponsor? Will you stand up, please, sweetheart, both of you guys? I saw another one in the back. Thank you so much, ladies. So make sure to get their numbers after the meeting. If you are too shy or if you're looking for a sponsor, please come up to the podium so we can get connected with you after the meeting. Please join us every Monday night for our Big Book Study meeting where we go through the book. Fellowship starts at 6:30, and the book study starts promptly at 7:15. Also, as a little announcement, Russell, we have one more week with you. It's been great. I really love how Russell always sticks to God, which is the purpose of this program, why it's all over the steps. Keith N., however, will be getting his 12-step series on January 29th. Same room, same time. If you should require a big book of your own, we have large print editions available for sale. We meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 8:15 p.m. We ask that you be courteous and ready at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
If you want to catch up with any of the podcasts, either from this week or any other week we've been here, we put them all up at alcoholicsandgod.org. It's really fun to listen to during your downtime if you have any. I'd also like to invite you all to our Big Book Study on Monday nights in the other room. Starts at 7:15, and where we really learn what all the stuff in here is all about, and it's a blast, so go ahead and join us. Thank you. Thank you again, Russell, for speaking for us, and have a nice way of closing. We say the prayer seated. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, the glory, forever and ever. Amen. See you next week.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do. It doesn't
There's a girl in the corner with tear stains on her eyes. From the places she's wandered and the shame she can't hide, she says, how did I get here? I'm not who I once was, and I'm crippled by the fear that I've fallen too far to love. But don't you know who you are, what has been done for you? Don't you know who you are? You are more than the choices that you've made. You are more than the sons of past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. Well, she tries to believe it, that she's been given new life. But she can't shake the feeling that it's not true tonight. She knows all the answers, and she's rehearsed all the lines. And so she'll try to do better, but then she's too weak to try. But don't you know who you are? Mistakes, you are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. You are more than the choices that you make. You are more than the sum of your past mistakes.